Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us this afternoon. And my guest this week speaking to us by phone from his office is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'd love to have your questions for him during our next half hour. Call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Send emails to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. I understand you're still in the temporary office. Is that right? Not back in Old Stoney just yet?
Not quite yet, Stan. As I mentioned to you by phone, I'll be one of the last offices to move back into Old Stoney. The great migration back into our historic City Hall has commenced, however. Our building services department on the city side is completely up and operational in Old Stoney, and it looks as though the mayor's office and the clerk treasurer's office will begin to migrate back into the building perhaps around the first or second week of November, and we'll definitely keep the public up to speed on that as we move forward. But it's exciting. We're wrapping the project up, getting good feedback on the building, and I can't wait to showcase the interior of the building to the community. I think people are going to be proud of what we've all pulled together to get done.
I like that term, great migration. We should hang on to that and use that frequently.
Okay.
I wanted to mention a couple of other things to you. We've been getting some emails here from your public relations folks talking about all of the paving that you and I have talked about on this program. Can you give me an update on where that stands?
Yeah, sure. So we are getting ready to wrap up all of our paving projects here in the next 2 to 3 weeks. We've accomplished close to 26 projects across the community here this year. When all is said and done, we'll have paved about 10.1 miles of total roadway in the city. So that comprises roughly 12% of the entire amount of roadway in our city. And again, that was thanks to our state officials stepping up to the plate, really on both sides of the island. I want to thank them very much, all our representatives and our senators, for filling this dramatic need. What it meant for Frankfort was an additional $1.1 million in road funding for this year. Normally, what I have in my budget stand on an annual basis is around $345,000. So this increased our ability by 322% in our city this year alone to resurface more roads. Obviously, with the weather being what it is today, we can't have any crews out with the weather, but the guys are going to get back to work, and with a shake of good weather, hopefully here in the next 3 weeks, we can get things back to normal and people won't have the headaches of finding alternate routes to go home.
And you've also been working on your downtown revitalization plan, trying to finalize that. Is that right?
Yes. So this has been a year and a half long process. You and I have talked about this, and it was all culminated at our last city council meeting where the city council voted on a resolution that they accepted the plan. This was really a part of OCRA's requirements so we can close out that grant. So now we have this downtown revitalization plan, and we will put that up on the city website too so people can view that in a digital format. And so now it's all about staying engaged with the council, the Redevelopment Commission, Frankfort Main Street, our Chamber of Commerce, to implement the components of that plan. We want to be held accountable that we carry out the projects that the plan calls for. And I think our Main Street director, you know, she said in the public meeting at the City Council that the plan really hit the nail on the head, that it was a good reflection of all the community members' comments over this past year and a half. So that made us all feel really good. It's a good reflection of a broad swath of our community and what they want to see in our historic downtown. And really, Stan, this is going to be all about creating an amenity infrastructure that attracts people to live in our community. Economic development anymore in the 21st century is not so much about attracting businesses as it is attracting people. And to attract people, you have to have a beautiful city with recreational amenities that attracts the type of workforce, the larger industries, manufacturing industries, high-tech job industries that are looking for, so they can make sound products in whatever form and fashion that they do on a daily basis. So that's what this is about, and I can't wait to work with the council to fund some of these projects.
wanted to get to a question that's come in to us by phone. We've had a caller call in and ask about syringe exchange programs and the future of them in Clinton County. And we should mention at the outset of this, these are county decisions and not city decisions. But he seems to want your feeling on the idea of a syringe exchange program based in part on the fact that at least three counties surrounding you, Tippecanoe, Boone, and Howard, are in the process of trying to get these syringe exchange or syringe services programs, as they're sometimes called, going. We've talked a little bit on this program about your fight against drug crime in your city. What is your feeling on the idea of having a syringe exchange program in Clinton County as a way to try to do that?
Well, to be honest with you, Stan, I'm really torn on it, and I would like to be educated further on it. You know, we have not approached the time in our community, not saying that it's not coming. This caller might be spot on. It might be something that, as you stated, our Clinton County commissioners might have to look at. As of right now, I am not hearing any tremendous reports from our health officials in Clinton County that we have any type of infectious disease outbreaks, hep C, HIV, things that would be passed from a dirty needle into the bloodstream, into a human being. If we start seeing those things, and maybe they're here, maybe they're not being reported, I think that's something that county officials need to look at. I will say this, if a program like that were to be put into place, I think you'd also have to do a very, very, very good job that when these clean syringes were being handed out, that we also have a backbone of literature and resources to offer these addicts for support in terms of breaking their addiction. And I completely understand giving people, I guess, a safe atmosphere if it's going to mean saving life, but we would have to have a process for me to buy into that would also say, here's material, here's resources, we have counselors on standby, and we want to help you break this addiction so that you can not only live a healthy life, but a productive life. And, you know, this subject has really touched my heart here in the past few weeks, and I wrote an open letter to the community, and it can still be found on my Facebook page and on frankfurt-in.gov, and it was, you know, really me pleading to the community, reaching out to the community. You know, we're not going to be able to legislate this issue away at the end of the day. You can't police this issue away. We want to put the bad guys, we want to lock them up, but it's going to take our churches, it's going to take our not-for-profits, it's going to take leaders of households getting out in their neighborhoods and making positive differences and being a positive influence in the lives of others to start changing this habit of addiction and the throngs and the despair that it brings upon a community. It's going to take us all, not just the government and police.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfurt Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'd love to have more of your questions in our next half an hour. You can call them in to area code 765-496-1999. Send emails to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, you mentioned that the county commissioners are the ones who are in charge of the syringe exchange program decisions. They did something else, interestingly, that I wanted to get your feelings on. Your county commissioners have recently lowered the fee for food vendors who operate at festivals and other temporary setups in the county. And I wondered if people had come to you complaining about that fee schedule as you tried to get them to come to events like the annual hot dog festival or something like that. Had that been a concern that had come to your office?
No, it is not. I'll tell you that Frankfurt Main Street does coordinate our hot dog festival, and they also coordinate all vending fees. Now, I will say that we're blessed. The executive director of our Main Street program is Kim Stevens, and she is also this year, she's the president of the State Festival Association. So Kim keeps a very close pulse on, you know, what vending fees are, what's competitive, what's fair, what's not fair. And I can just tell you visibly, every year we pack our streets with vendors at the hot dog festival. Now, we do control vending fees at our annual July 4th celebration in the TPA Park, and I can tell you what we charge for those. $60 for a 15-by-15 foot space, and depending on how much electricity you're needing, it's either $15 or $25. So I believe that's fairly nominal, especially for the amount of people that we drive to our park on an annual basis. I do agree with what the county commissioners did, though, Stan. I think it's been a big push in our community to make our fairgrounds more attractive, to drive more events there annually throughout the year, not just during the county fair time in July, and especially just appointing this new board. They're kind of revamping things. So I think it was a smart move on their part to just kind of open the doors, say we're open for business, lower those fees to try to drive more activity at our fairgrounds. It's right in the middle of the city, so obviously it's in my best interest to support good initiatives there, and I think this was a smart decision by our commissioners.
Did it cause you at all to take a look at the fees that the city might charge for other things and assess things the same way the commissioners did? Because it sounds like what happened was people came to the commissioners and said, hey, in some cases it's cheaper to buy like 2 1-day passes than a 3-day pass or something like that. Have you been looking at all at how the city charges fees in a similar fashion?
Well, we'll constantly, if there's a good idea out there and we can do something to make ourselves more competitive, we'll absolutely look at that. At this point in time, I've had no vendor, and the two examples that I would have for you is either the Hot Dog Festival or July 4th come to us and really tell me it's an issue. And on an annual basis, again, you know, our spaces are jam-packed for both the Hot Dog Festival and the July 4th celebration, but it's something we'll definitely look at. You know, I'll research it, I'll look at those fees, and work with Kim Stevens, Main Street, our park superintendent, Joel Tatum, and as we move forward, if we need to flex those to be more open for business, we'll certainly do that. We can learn and always grow.
While we're on the subject of fees and costs, I noticed where the city's utility service board recently rejected a plan to spend about $3,500 a month or up to $3,500 a month on computer tech support services, even though from what I gather, there are very few people, maybe even just a single person in some cases, who's charged with IT support in the city. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so right now our IT staff is one. We have one IT staff, and that's on the utility side. And the utilities have always been very good to the city. We work at arm's length transaction with them. We want to have a great working relationship with them, obviously. And Shane Jacoby does a great job of servicing. But with several different departments, I know our IT committee is working very hard to bulk up the support that one individual has. On the flip side of that, what the city's doing, we are hiring an HR individual going into next year, and we will also allow the utilities to have access to that resource. So we help one another out where it's applicable to save everyone a little bit of money. I know it's very important for them to up their staff and the hands that can take all the desktop help and support on the IT side. I think that the one thing that the Utility Service Board was requesting with this particular situation is they want to see an hourly rate, and I don't believe in the one proposal that they were given, it truly defined an hourly rate. So what I suggested to the IT committee rather yesterday was doing an RFQ process, a request for quotes, opening them at one point in time, specify to your vendors that you're reaching out to what's going to be the hourly rate, what's going to be the minimum hours that we can have you, what's going to be the maximum hours, open those at one time so it's a fair process, a very transparent and accountable process, and then have the board come up with the decision. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's the IT committee's job to be good diplomats, to work with their other board members, to come up with a situation that's really going to be best for the ratepayers and the city as a whole.
Are you in a position where you could hire another full-time IT person to help out?
On the city side, through our budget?
Right.
Yeah, so that's not in our budget. Could we handle it? You know, it would be something that we would obviously have to take away from something else to be able to hire, and that was why our thought process was bringing on this full-time HR director, which the city is going to pick up not only annual salary but their benefits, that would be our way of supporting a need of the utilities, just as the utility supports our need through IT services. So as we move forward, we thought that was a fair way of doing things, but obviously we'll continue to work with the utilities, and if we need to be flexible, we will. We'll work together as a team. That's what we do.
You mentioned not getting an hourly rate, and it sounded like the previous contract would have had about a $3,500 a month flat fee. And I wonder if you think the city was being overcharged at all, and that you might be able to, by having that hourly rate, save a significant amount of money based just on time served by whomever you actually do contract with.
I think that's part of it, Stan. I definitely agree with you, and I also think there's an accountability portion of this as well. This is going to be brand new to our city. We're used to having a full-time staffed IT person, so we know what they're doing every day. We have a general idea, of course. They're given task orders, but if we hire a consultant to come in, I think it's important for that consultant to be able to show hour by hour, here's what I was doing, and here's how you were billed accordingly. And so with the quote that was provided, although it was probably done in the best of intentions, it just didn't quite have the accountability and the transparency that our utility service board wanted to see. So although it is going to expand this process from a time standpoint, I think it was good for them to show that transparency and that accountability and really look out after the ratepayers, especially during this time, and you and I have talked about, as we're talking about flexing our electric rates and increasing our infrastructure capacity, every portion of our utilities needs to be ran in a very stringent manner. And I think this is an example of the Utility Service Board really watching the P's and Q's and holding people accountable when they're charging the city for services.
I'm glad you mentioned the electric rates. I wanted to mention that to you as well. We've discussed on this program your thoughts about trying to raise those rates. I was interested recently in some testimony that came to the city council from a consultant you'd hired, and they say that under the current plan, customers who use less electricity would actually see a higher percentage increase in their bills than perhaps those people who use more energy, because one of the fees that's going up is the basic service fee that runs electricity to a home, and that's a fixed charge for everyone. Does that signal to you that maybe this plan needs a little bit of rejiggering so that people can be charged based on, you know, higher consumption means higher cost?
Well, here's the way I look at this. So, you know, my wife and I, Samantha, I'm a freak about walking around the house and keeping the lights off if we do not need them. It's just something I got from my father as I grew up. But, you know, there's a portion of security that I expect when I flip a light on, I want that light to come on. I rely on that reliability. So as a ratepayer myself, that fixed cost, so that will go from $4 to $15, and that fixed cost takes into account that to provide that reliability and to provide the opportunity for that electrical service to happen at a given residence or a given garage or an apartment, that we all as ratepayers have a certain responsibility to pay into this electrical grid. Now, on the flip side of that, we're actually bringing the electrical rate charges, the consumption charges, down. And so as it's been explained to us, those things are going to offset themselves. So the average residential electric rate payer is going to see an average now of a $7 per month increase on their bill. There are going to be a few people, a few outliers in this situation that are going to see a slightly higher increase. Those people that use very, very minor electricity on a monthly basis. That's why it was important that our city council saw those sensitivity reports. But at the end of the day, residential consumers will see an average of a $7 increase. And, you know, I think it's important to state, our electric utility has not had a rate adjustment in 20 years. And the last adjustment that we had was actually a decrease. So over time, as costs have raised, as health insurance premiums have raised, as salaries have raised, the cost to buy energy has raised, this is just a hard decision that we have to make. And if we don't have strong utility infrastructure, it's going to be hard for us as a city to grow. What I also pushed these individuals on was, okay, at the end of the day, if these proposed electric rate adjustments go into place, where are we going to be competitively in our region and the central portion of the state in terms of other communities? And even if these proposed rates go through, we will still be considerably cheaper than communities like Lebanon, Anderson, and much, much cheaper than the rates that Duke Energy of Indiana provide for their consumers. So we're staying competitive, and this will be a way to bring our overall electrical infrastructure up to the 21st century to be able to handle more residential impact in our community, hopefully growth there, along as growth in our industrial park.
But couldn't you, and maybe even shouldn't you, engineer this in a way that those people who are the bigger electrical consumers are the ones who are footing a larger portion of the bill. I mean, couldn't you institute different service rates for, say, an industrial user or different sizes of home? Or, I mean, couldn't you engineer this so that you're not seeing a larger percentage increase in the bill of the people who, like you, try to turn the lights off whenever they can?
Sure, great question, and we actually did. So through this process, we identified cost driving factors, and then we allocate those evenly across our billing, across all different types of commercial rates, residential rates, general power services. So one rate type doesn't subsidize the other. So with this proposed rate structure, residential service would rise 9.61% as in compared to commercial service rate B, which would raise 11.83%. Rate C, general power service, would raise 11.71%. So we flex these rates so that the residential consumers do not subsidize industrial or commercial users as this proposed rate increase may or may not go into effect.
There was also some resistance, and I apologize, no pun intended, to the idea of phasing in these rate increases, largely on the basis that it might be confusing to the billing process in some ways. And there are a lot of significant rate increases that are done by municipal utilities, be they wastewater or electric. And in fact, Crawfordsville Power and Light is doing this right now, phasing in their increases so that the cost burden is not as shocking in the outset to the consumer. So why is that not something that Frankfurt seems prepared to do?
Well, one thing that was brought up by our consultants, and you know, this is something that Mayor Barton may be able to speak to a little more educated than I if they're going through the process, and I'm not sure, is Crawfordsville, are they a part of the IURC stand, do you know?
I honestly do not know.
Okay, so our electrical company here in Frankfurt, we are part of the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission. So to go through our process, we have to go through hearings, and we have to combine a year's worth of financial data from our electric, and we have to provide to the IURC a very solid legal case as to why these rate increases are justified. To go through that process and to get the IURC to put their final stamp of approval on this, not only does it take around a year, but it also costs us around $250,000 to $300,000 to go through the process in general. And so if we were to phase these rates in, then as I understand it, we would have to go back through this process being a part of the IURC year after year after year after year. So for us to do that, it would just be entirely too burdensome, not only on our staff, but on our rate payers as well, having to fund this process on an annual basis. Right now, with where interest rates are at, we can keep the overall rate increase down lower by issuing bonds up front for all the infrastructure upgrades, as opposed to funding this all with cash up front. So, for example, with interest rates being where they're at, our increase would be over 12% on average if bonds were not issued for these long-term improvements. So this has been a process. You know, I think our utility service board, they've looked at this 12 different ways. We've attempted to advocate for everyone as best as we possibly can, but we've just come to a point in time where if we don't flex our rates, if we don't invest in our infrastructure, it's going to greatly inhibit our ability to not only grow our community, but to also provide reliable power service to our industries along with our residential users.
I've looked it up a little bit, and yes, Crawfordsville Electric, Light, and Power has made its application to the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission. And regarding what you were saying about having to go back to the IURC, I think also about a wastewater treatment facility around here that American Suburban Utilities owns, and their filing also specifies that they want to phase in a rate over time. And I believe it's only just the one filing that says we'd like to raise it this much in year one, this much in year two, et cetera. So I think that is doable. I'm certainly not an expert in rate filings in the state of Indiana, but if that is something it turns out you can do with a relatively minimal amount of hassle, and I can certainly understand where it would be a hassle to have to go back year after year, as you're describing. But if you can do it in one filing and you can phase it in so that people can budget for a couple of years of smaller increases, is that something you would consider?
Yeah, I think it would be something we could consider, Stan. I'll be quite frank with you. At this point in time, we're so far along in this process with getting ready to take our case to the IURC. I don't know at this point in time if things could be altered. I know that our Utility Service Board, along with our City Council, looked at this and they thought that this was a very responsible way of doing things. You know, I think an average increase to a residential household of $7 a month is fairly mild. You know, I understand that $7 a month for some people it might definitely be a stretch for those individuals, but I do think it's mild. I think it's fair, and I think that for the service they're going to receive, I think it's a good thing. You know, the alternate, if we weren't to do anything, and it's a shame because over the past 20 years, what really should have been done is every 5 or 6 years, the Utility Service Board or the City Council or the mayor at the time should have been taking a look at these rates, and we need to do that moving forward. Future mayors and future city councils, they need not kick the can so far down the road until we get to a point in time that we're looking at an emergency situation. Let's look at these things every 5 or 6 years so that we can plan and our residents can plan for any flexes that might happen in the rates. I will tell you, on our wastewater side, our wastewater is not a part of the IURC. So if we go through this process on wastewater, it's going to be much less intrusive. And I think if you look, Stan, there's only a handful of communities that are still a part of the IURC. And one thing that was talked about amongst our council was actually going through the process of removing our electric from the IURC. And if we choose to do that in the future, these processes are going to be much easier. We can work directly with our communities, and we'll have the flexibility to maybe phase in rates a little bit easier as opposed to going through this long, cumbersome, and very expensive process the IURC brings along with it.
One more quick topic in our last couple of minutes. I noticed that the hearing authority in the city had recently voted to knock down 3 different buildings. How many does this make now that have been slated for demolition? You and I have been talking about this practically since you've been on the show.
Yeah. So this year, those are the only 3, minus the one building that was taken down in our downtown that's now being proposed for redevelopment through our downtown revitalization plan. These 3 particular properties, 2 of them have been severely burnt by fires. They're frankly a danger to the neighborhoods that they're in. They're left vacant. The owners have just simply walked away from them. There's holes in roofs. They're charred. It's just an accident waiting to happen for a child in a neighborhood to stumble into one of these homes. So we actually have our hearing on these properties this afternoon at 4 p.m. And, of course, the property owners, the building owners have been notified. We are more than welcome to have them come in, hear their statements. If they have plans on how they're going to clean their properties up, we will be more than happy to work with them. But if not, in these instances, with safety on the line, because these properties, make no mistake about it, there are safety concerns, we as a city are going to have to step in and do something to remedy the issue.
Really quickly, I know you've said you don't want to have to knock buildings down, but is it useful to you to do it every now and again so that you can show building owners you're really serious, that if it gets bad enough, you will?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we've said from the beginning of this administration that we're going to be tough on housing, because housing is one thing in the city of Frankfort we got to do a better job of. And the dilapidated houses in certain neighborhoods, if you're not going to take care of them, you're going to be held accountable, because the majority of this community does take care of their properties, and it's not fair to them, especially when we have safety situations. And one thing that I've been thinking about with these infill lots, Stan, when we do tear a home down, you know, we have a very active construction program in our high school called the Building Trades Program, where actually students will build new homes in the community. They're building one right now. So I've thought about in the future, talking to our city attorney, maybe we offer up those infill lots to our building trades class and have them build new structures to re-inject pride back into these various neighborhoods.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We look forward to doing it again next month.
Stan, thanks. Have a great week.
Same to you. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.